right. I just moved my head away from the mic.
To breathe in. Let's do it. I'm doing a podcast now. Welcome, everybody, to the Fan Gamer Podcast. My name is Simon Roberts, but you can call me Kevin. This week, we're talking about brothers and sisters, friends, siblings, companions, family, the world at large, in your immediate vicinity, your sphere of influence. Joining me this week, we have Elosar Charlie. How you doing?
Hey, Kevin. I'm doing pretty good.
Good, good. We have, joining us for the first time, our man in Japan. You might know him as Kaiosuke, but his real name is Mark.
Hey, my brothers and sisters.
Hey, Mark. How's Japan treating you?
Oh, good. Except for good? The crappy Christmas.
What
because
is Japanese
is one.
Christmas
There's
like?
No Christmas. Oh. It's basically just eating cake, and that's it.
That sounds fantastic.
So what,
oh, well, yeah.
So you have your cake and eat it too?
Right. It's called Christmas cake.
Wait, you're telling me the whole annual gift man thing from that, not to be confused with our annual gift man holiday, but the one from that Simpsons, that's not true?
I don't think I saw that one.
Mark.
Oh, Liz. Everyone, it's Liz. Say hi, Liz.
Hi.
And we also heard from Joe. How you doing?
Hi.
And I don't know if he's actually here. John, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh my god, John's here, everybody.
What up, John?
Hooray!
All right. So we got a good crowd in today. John, since you showed up last, you have to go first. What are you playing this week?
I played a little Metal Gear Solid 3 yesterday, and I've been finishing up Donkey Kong Country 2. So right now for Metal Gear Solid 3, I'm in the... Well, you got to really ask, what part of Metal Gear Solid in any game is not cinematic? I feel like I'm just kind of dropping in parts of the game. Like, oh, let me walk him to this building and, oh, cinematic for 15 minutes or a long codec. I'm like, oh, okay. I haven't played a Metal Gear Solid game in a while since I played Twin Snakes and also the PS1 version of Metal Gear 1 back this past summer when we did the Metal Gear Solid merch. But I played Metal Gear Solid 3. And I'm not saying I'm not enjoying it. It's just I don't feel as involved yet. But what Liz tells me is that I should, once I start fighting the Cobra bosses, I should feel much more involved in the game.
Mm-hmm. Do you just sit there and watch the cutscenes, or do you get some stuff done, break out a different game on your DS maybe?
No, I try to involve myself in the entire story because I know with Metal Gear Solid games and their story, it's very deep, and I really kind of just pour my mind into what they're saying because I like being immersed in that world. So I just kind of let it flow and I enjoy it and give it my full attention.
You actually pay attention then. See, I missed a whole chunk, the part where the president explains the Patriots for the first time in Metal Gear 2. I missed a big chunk of that because I don't remember exactly. I think I had to help my mother take some laundry upstairs or something. But I was just like, I don't really care that much about this cutscene, I think. So I left it off and just went and did some other stuff.
I know for Metal Gear games, I definitely try to make sure to have a certain slot of time for them because they require so much of your facilities, physical, mental, emotional, if you're that kind of player. But it fully immerses you in every aspect of the game that it can. So I try to I finally said, I have enough time to deal with Metal Gear Solid 3, and I thought there would be a good number of cutscenes, but there were way more than I expected for the initial part.
You know, they do allow you participation. If you hold down R1 during most of them, it'll generally put you in Snake's perspective, and it's interesting seeing what he looks at sometimes. It's either, like, he'll see ghosts, or he'll look at a girl's butt.
I was actually kind of curious, because I see R1, I thought, oh, wait, is that the skip button? Because I don't want to skip the cutscene.
It's not a skip.
Okay, good.
Is there a skip button?
There is not a skip button, but you should be pressing R1 as much as possible since there are something, like, there are some stupid little things like Snake, like, undressing Ava with his eyes, but sometimes he will see useful stuff out of the corner of his eye. So it's interesting. It's a different camera angle sometimes.
It's good to know that. Actually, I think you were telling me, Liz, that a lot of the really interesting conversations that they have, I mean, not like MGS2 with the 20-minute codec conversation, but there's some really interesting codec conversations in MGS3 with a Signet. So yeah, I'm looking forward to that because I really do like some good story, but I think I'm yearning for a little bit more action right now. So.
No, it does bother me a little bit when they don't have a skip cutscene button, because I'm the kind of guy who will replay a game a few times, and if I really, really want to skip, like, if I'm like, I get it, let's just move on, and they won't let me go past it. It's sort of like I'm also the kind of person who will just skip around to my favorite scenes on a DVD, so.
Sometimes it's a trick, though. Like, when I was, I've tried a couple times to do 100% completion run of Final Fantasy X-2, and they'll let you skip cutscenes, but they won't give you the percentage for viewing it if you skip over it. So they're like, you don't have to watch it, but you better watch it.
That's terrible.
It's Jeez. A trick. It's terrible. They put a lot of effort into that.
That'd be like if in Grand Theft Auto they wouldn't give you a percentage point for not watching the cutscenes, even though you failed the mission 3 times already.
It's kind of like if a professor gives you an assignment and is like, you don't have to do this assignment.
But you won't get 100%.
Yeah, you won't fail, but you won't get anything above a D+.
Well, that kind of puts it all in perspective, because I never cared about my grades in college. So is that what you're playing right now, Liz? 10-2, or are you playing something else?
I'm not playing 10-2. I'm kind of juggling between... I'm still keeping up with Tactics. I'm on the 4th chapter of that, so that's kind of coming to the end game where you start collecting all the secret characters and all your classes should be leveled up by that point, so you're just kind of plowing through crap. And I'm also... I got Wii Sports Resort for Christmas, and that has been an enlightening experience. I am very bad at Frisbee. Very bad.
Now, do you think that you're actually bad at Frisbee, or do you think that the Motion Plus controls have just thrown everything out of whack for those of us who were used to the old not plus with, like, the original sports?
I am bad at Frisbee legitimately in real life, because I do the same thing I do in Wii Fit Plus, Wii Sports Resort, where you throw the thing. I have Wii Fit Plus too, that's fun. But I do the thing where you throw the Frisbee, like you twist your hand at the last minute, and then it just wings into the ground.
Exactly. It's all about the flick of the wrist, and they don't seem to have captured that. Although I speak as a man who the first time I got the Frisbee, I tried to throw it underhand, and Nintendo really doesn't like that.
How do you throw a Frisbee What?
You know, like, instead of coming from, you throw from left to right if you're right-handed, so it comes across your stomach. I tend to throw a Frisbee, usually when I'm trying to be tricky with it, from the outside, so that I'm going sort of from right to left. Because then you can just sort of whip your hand forward and whoosh.
Oh.
Yeah, and you can't throw a Frisbee like that at all in Wii Sports. I had to be corrected.
Yeah, they don't let you do that kind of stuff. Maybe you should switch to pretending you're a left-handed player for that. Maybe that would make the game trip it out.
I have noticed that tricking the game seems to be the only way to hit the golf ball for me.
The golf's always weird in those games. I don't know what it is, but the long game is fine. The short game is not so great. It's basically like playing a Happy Gilmore simulator.
A little bit, yeah, but I didn't hook... I barely hooked at all, ever, in the original golf. And now with Resort Golf, because they demand that you go exactly through the circular motion. What I do is I just hold it straight out in front of me and then swing my arm, you know, like I'm in a... what's the name of that woman who did the music video where it's like an 80s workout thing?
Call on me?
No. You know, she was in Grease, wasn't she?
That's ambiguous.
Olivia Newton-John?
Yeah, that's the one. I'm in an Olivia Newton-John video. I just sort of swing my arm right in front of me, and that seems to hit the ball pretty okay.
I feel like we're all going to have to take your word on that, because I can't recall that many Olivia Newton-John videos.
I got a Canada thing.
Was one of the first people to do... She had, like, her debut album had 6 songs or something, and she did a video for every song. This was back in the 80s, so she was one of the first people to ever do that.
I just got a confirmation from Sabrina, and it is Olivia Newton-John.
There you go. Thank you.
All right.
John's fellow Canadian. Wait. Sabrina there.
Actually, is it Grease 1 or Grease 2?
It's Grease 1.
1. Grease 2 has Michelle Pfeiffer, I want to say?
Correct.
Thank you. I'm glad that somebody is here to fact-check me on my Grease knowledge.
It's not me. It's Sabrina. She's the one.
So let's move to Joe. What are you playing this week, Joe?
I have been playing Mass Effect recently.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I've finished it once already, but, you know, Mass Effect 2 is coming out near the end of the month.
Oh, yes, and the replay.
Yeah.
So that you can get some good stats for your save transfer.
Well, see, that's kind of funny, because I was reading, because they revamped the class systems, you're not going to get your character transferred exactly, but what they're saying now is that depending on the end level you have with your character, you're going to get, like, some sort of bonus. So I'm basically just playing to up my character right now.
But so you don't get a level 85 behemoth-type character with all of the skill sets and everything in place?
That I can say no. I mean, I'd have to read up on again and see what actually happens. I think you will, like, the way they said it, will some things will carry over, but you're not going to get the exact copy of your Mass Effect 1 character.
Also, in Mass Effect, there was there's a finite number of enemies in the game, so eventually you're just going to run out of experience points anyway.
Oh, so maybe in Mass Effect 2, if you've genocided an entire species, they just don't show up in the second game or something.
I'm sure that happens at least once. I'm pretty sure at some point I was given the option to just genocide a species, and I had to make that decision. But I don't think I ever did.
You're just too nice.
I am.
I can't genocide a whole planet. Can I just take out the people on the dark side right now? That seems fair.
Well, you know, dark side of the moon, dark side of the forest, it's all equal.
Yeah, I guess so. And what about the alien that you can have sex with and cause a big kerfuffle on Fox News? Maybe you have a kid in Mass Effect 2.
The distinct possibility, actually.
Maybe you have an abortion in Mass Effect 2. That's a kerfuffle for Fox News.
Downloadable content, abortion edition. Yikes.
Yeah, I'm sure the censors will love that one.
I think a webcomic has already gone through that. No, wait, was that an abortion? I don't remember. I don't read it.
First of all, it was a miscarriage, and second, oh my god, let's not bring that up.
Oh, that comic?
All right.
that's a
whole
one.
Different podcast, Charlie.
I'm sorry.
Don't go there. You know where you can go, Charlie? What are you playing this week?
Well, as a matter of fact, I just finished reading the novel Dragon Prince by Melanie Ron, and it was a pretty interesting little... what was the question?
You're reading...
Read
yes, as a matter
like
of fact,
a normal
hell?
Book.
Yes, these book things, they're pretty sweet, really.
They have those available on paper now, don't they?
Yeah.
I hope you did it on a Kindle.
What?
I hope you did it on a Kindle. That's like a game with words.
I've never even heard of a Kindle.
Are you serious?
I have Kindled a Fire before.
No,
wow.
Wow.
No, this is more like it kindles the spark in your mind.
It kindles the imagination.
And deletes George Orwell books if you bought them illegally when Amazon wasn't going to let you.
Yeah, that too.
Yep.
No, Charlie, it's a reading device thing, like an e-book, a book reader, whatever they call those things,
okay.
From
I've
Amazon.
E-book. I'm just old-fashioned, so I literally have stacks and stacks of old books that I've read through and don't have any place to put them anymore, so... They just take up room.
They do make shelves for those.
Well, yeah, but then you eventually you have to buy another shelf, and then you have to find room for that shelf. And
boo-hoo. And then if you want to talk about books with your friends, you have to go out and make friends. And if you don't have any friends, then you have to buy them. And
yeah,
your life is just so hard, isn't it, Charlie?
It sure is.
You got no room for all these books you keep buying, and you're spending all your money on books, so you can't buy any... acquaintances.
I can buy my acquaintances. I can't think of too many friends I've bought there, Kevin.
I think I've bought all of my friends.
Do you wait for them to come out in the paperback edition so you can get them half off?
Do you have a Barnes & Noble membership so you can get an additional 10% off of them?
Yep. I have to buy an atlas so that I know how to find them across the country. I don't always buy local.
eBay.
My friendships have a very big ecological footprint.
Better reduce your carbon footprint there, Kevin.
Mm-hmm. We'll start by trying to make Falcon close his mouth once in a while. Hi-oh.
Whoa. So I totally have been playing a video game, by the way.
I was just going to go on to Mark and see what he's been playing, but yeah, okay. No, if you've been playing a game, then bring it up.
Yeah, I started playing Muramasa today because last Sunday was my last day working for GameStop, so I kind of cleared off my my hold pile while I still had the discount. And really, it makes me think a lot of Valkyrie Profile, except whenever you attack the enemies, you don't go into a turn-based battle.
But so is that Muramasa the Demon Blade or something like that?
Yeah, for the Wii.
Yeah.
It's a very pretty game.
It is. I went by the stand, because they had a really central booth right on the concourse at the entrance to the whole bigger display area at PAX. And so I walked by it all the time, and I was constantly looking at it. I'm like, that is a really beautiful game. That is just the attacks are kapow, boom, it jumps off the screen at me. But I never had any inclination to play it. I never actually wanted to walk up and be like, let me try that. It was just fun to watch.
Yeah, that's a pretty good description. It's all right to play, but I'm only an hour into it, so I can't say for certain how much it's really going to drag me in.
Well, I hope I have saved the best for last here, because Mark, being in Japan, I'm assuming you're playing some sort of wild Japanese game that none of us have played or possibly even heard of.
Well, I am playing a Japanese game, but it's a game you all know.
Oh, yeah.
An H game.
No.
Whoa.
And yet we all know it somehow.
Yeah, I am playing Mother, actually, for Game Boy Advance.
Hooray!
the first in the series, you know, the original.
The Earthbound Zero to our American friends.
Yay.
Right.
Yay.
It's basically the first time I've ever played farther than the graveyard, and I'm just now, I'm at the middle of the game, I guess. It's the desert, and I'm in the Monkey Grotto. And the thing I like about this game a lot, it's got a lot of the same humor, and I never even knew it, but like in Earthbound, it was just so many funny lines, and this game has the same kind of thing. It's just hilarious. Like, I'm in the Monkey Grotto, and I'm just talking to these monkeys, and they're saying the goofiest things. Like, I come up to this one monkey, he's like, "Turn away, but if you don't want to, keep on going." And I'm just like, okay, you know. And
isn't the very first monkey in the grotto say something like, "Every monkey in here is going to lie to you"?
Yeah.
And then there's another monkey later that says, "All the other monkeys were lying, but not me."
Right, yeah. It's just so many, like, just goofy lines in this game. And I just laugh out loud a lot of the times. But when I'm not laughing, it's just, you know, I'm getting battles every second, and I take a step. And there was one time I hadn't even taken three steps, and I had three battles. Like, every time I moved in just a little tiny bit, I had like a battle. Like, so I get that a lot. But
you must have high levels by now, though.
Yeah, well, I'm at level 28 right now.
Yeah, you can almost finish the game at that level, so you should be fine.
Oh, wow. What's the highest level?
It's either 50 or 99.
Oh, okay.
I think 50
there's
where
a big difference.
Well, I think 50 is where really hardcore players stop because they're bored. And 99 is where you can go with that.
Yeah, I think I would just go insane trying to level 99 in Mother 1.
Yep.
Well, and so I really am liking it. I'm glad I've made myself play it because just because of the, you know, the funniness level and but it's still pretty hard, so I'm using the Earthbound Zero walkthrough on starman.net because otherwise it's just a pain in the butt just trying to figure out what to do next. And
yeah, that's a pretty good walkthrough.
Yeah, I'm liking it.
And on the Game Boy Advance version, they fixed things like there are bad guys in the train tunnels now, right?
Bad guys in train tunnels, yes.
So now you can't walk through the train tunnel and get Anna before Lloyd anymore.
Right. I tried to walk through it. They were pretty tough.
Wow. Did you name them Anna and Lloyd and Nintendo, or did you use your own names?
I used my own name. I named Nintendo Mark. I named Anna my wife's name, Saudi, and then I can't remember. I think I named the other two just the normal names.
See, I always like that because a lot of people just, you know, go with the regular names, and it's so boring to me. I think everybody should change your name every time you get the opportunity.
I don't agree with that. I feel like it's you should play, at least the first time through, I feel like you should play with the names intended just to get the best feel. Then you can play through people like Barts and stuff.
Because think about it. Mother 3, right? You probably name Hinawa after your girlfriend or your steady or whatever.
Yeah,
or
I named
yourself
her after my girlfriend,
female
Kevin.
Gamer. That's hot. But you know what I mean? Like, you give it a significant name that holds a meaning to you, and you're like, I'm going to go through this game with this person, and it's going to be cool because it's me and my friends. And then she up and dies in the very first chapter. Spoiler alert, yeah. And you, like, when I did that the very first time I played the game, even though it was in Japanese, like, I knew something was going on because I'm like, he seems kind of angry, and he's swinging that stick around pretty hardcore. So I went and checked in the translation, and I'm like, she's dead?
Well, that's the good news.
Actually, the bad news is where we found the Drago Tooth.
But I've always loved to change my names in games just because it's interesting and interesting things happen. Like if you ever change Barrett's name to Mr. T in Final Fantasy VII, because that was the most obvious name. But at some point, whenever they're getting out of the Shinra building, Eris calls him Mr. Barrett. But in mine, she says Mr. T, and he replies Mr. T. That don't sound right. And I got lots of laughs out of that.
There you
every
go.
Time.
Unexpected humor exists when you change names, like when you make your favorite food babies. The same thing.
So when you take Barrett to the Golden Saucer, is Cloud calling him Mr. Barrett the whole time, or does he call? Or now I'm confused. I've confused myself with all these misters.
I don't know.
Mister.
I've never taken him out, honestly. Although I have to say I've tried just to see what happens, but it's never worked out.
Yeah, I've heard it's real tough.
As it should be.
It's easier to take Yuffie, I think.
It's dead easy to take Yuffie. All you have to do is antagonize Tifa and Eris at every chance you get, and then do the whole Wutai side quest before you go on the date.
Can you do that whole side quest before you go on the date?
Yeah, you get huge bonus to
to you mean the ones where you get Leviathan and everything?
You can't get Leviathan at that point, but you can fight Don Corneo and hang out with the Turks on their vacation.
Wow.
Hey, that's like the first thing you do once you get the Tiny Bronco.
That's right.
The first thing I do.
Tiny Bronco.
I've only played through it the one time. I know my boyfriend Matt is actually playing through it right now, and I forgot how much extraneous crap is in that game. Like, all the little mini-games, like, press X to give CPR, plus Y to jump on this dolphin, run on these train tracks, like, fight these people, have a muscle contest. It's really not a good game.
My favorite is the when you first get Eris inside the church and you have to push the barrels onto that guy's. I could
so
never
bad.
Do it correctly. So I was just like, you know what, Eris, just fight them all.
Yeah.
I'm
not
going to help you. You're going to get some extra experience. Just beat them up.
Liz was trying to explain this to me a little while earlier, and I thought she had said you give CPR to a dolphin. I'm like, what the heck? What kind of game is this?
It's just Japan, man. Mark will tell you all about CPR and dolphins, I'm sure.
Oh yes. It's a very regular thing here, John.
You got to get them out of those tuna nets somehow.
I don't know, South Park gave me the impression that they just didn't like dolphins over there.
Maybe
whales.
Yeah. It's very sad.
It's rather unfortunate. But no, that's good that you're playing Mother. That's cool. I myself, I have had an absolute glut of games because right after Christmas, I came into some money. And the instruction were, because apparently Metroid Prime Trilogy, first of all, this is sort of a bit of a long story. Metroid Prime Trilogy apparently was a limited release. I didn't hear about this, but it's nowhere to be found in Canada right now. I thought they were going to bring it back out without the art book. And so my mother accidentally buys me Metroid Prime 3 under the assurances that it's the latest in the series. So I took it back and got the money back for it. And so now I've got this $50 in hand, and I got to spend it on another video game. Because that was it's the thought that counts, and so you have to go with the thought. So I have in the last week, bought myself Final Fantasy III, Pilot Wings. I have the new Boiling Blob, I have the old one too now. And
nice.
The most interesting thing, though, is I didn't even realize this was out in North America yet, but Flower, Sun, and Rain, which may not mean a lot to this crowd, but if you're a fan of Suda Goichi, who did Killer 7 and No More Heroes, this was one of his first games with Marvelous Entertainment. And it's funny that Charlie brings up reading books, because it's less of a game and more like an interactive book experience.
And Flower, Sun, and Rain.
It's actually a really terrific game. You land on this island on Micronesia, and every morning you wake up and try to get into the lobby, but somebody stops you before you can get out of the hotel, and you have to solve a problem for them. You have a combination lock breaker inside your computerized laptop briefcase, and once you've solved the problem for the person, they thank you, and then a plane explodes. A jumbo jet flies by in the sky and then explodes. And that's the whole game, is just doing that over and over and over again.
That is so random.
And it's got all of Suda's trademarks. It's got Mexican wrestlers with the masks on, the luchadors. It's got weird guys who talk vaguely breaking the fourth wall about how you're inside of a video game and talking about the system. And it's not really indescribable, because I just described it, but it is kind of on the edge, and I wouldn't necessarily recommend it to anyone who wasn't already really into video games and stuff.
What system is that for?
It's on the DS. At least this is the version I'm playing is on the DS. I think it came out for something else in Japan. I'm not sure.
Wow, that was the first time I've heard of that game.
Yeah, but if you played Killer 7 or even No More Heroes, maybe. But those are much more accessible games than this.
Huh.
And I've also been playing Pilot Wings, which I was really excited, because I think I played Pilot Wings maybe once when I was a kid, and then never again. And then I tried to emulate it, and it doesn't work on emulation, because it's the Mode 7 is so... It's the way they did it doesn't work with an emulator at all. So when it came out on Virtual Console, I was really excited. I'm going to play Pilot Wings, I'm going to be flying my light plane and doing my parachuting, and right now it's on the fourth page of my channels list at the very back, because it's really, really difficult and it's driving me crazy.
Has anyone else played the original? Because I haven't.
The original Pilot Wings, I loved. I played it all the way through, and I think I beat everything, got a gold and all that kind of stuff, because my dad's a pilot, and I was just all about that, and I'm actually really excited. I still have it on my Super Nintendo, but I just might buy it just to have it on the Wii, because I like that game so much. I think it was one of the first games that came out for the Super Nintendo, along with Mario World.
Yeah, it was a launch title. And then they went back and redid it with Pilot Wings 64, which I thought was hard when it came out, and now that I'm thinking about it, it has nothing on the original, doesn't it?
Original's really hard. There's some spots where you just want to take the controller and just twist it into any sort of plastic mesh you can make it. You just get frustrated. I mean, I remember that and Mario Kart, or Super Mario Kart for the Super Nintendo.
The original Mario Kart, yep.
Yeah, like 150cc, there was this 150cc Special Cup drove me up the wall. Actually, I got so mad. Yeah. That's like the only time I've showed frustration out on something is I got so mad I tore up the instruction booklet for that game.
Oh, jeez.
That's the only time I got really angry with the game. And I've never gotten angry at the game since, but it drove me nuts because I was trying to work on one of these tracks and I just kept losing and these guys just kept going. I guess the rubber band AI was ridiculous. Like, I have almost a lap ahead and rubber band AI, but like, I'm coming back. And I'm like, cheaters! The game's cheating! And my mom's like, the game can't cheat. I'm like, I know it's cheating! And sure enough, rubber band AI just drove me nuts.
You just didn't have a word for it at the time.
Because we didn't have the internet at the time. We couldn't look up and, you know, compare and contrast with people around the world and be like, why does it keep doing this? Well, because that's how they programmed it. And then hackers break it open and find out, yeah, they really did program it to cheat.
Well, you can always talk with your friends and see if they have the same experience. It's not quite the same, but...
Yeah, but my friends are all, well, besides the fact that I paid them off, my friends are all, playing the same game as me. Like, in all likelihood, you're just seeing it in front of your own eyes. So, you're sitting in the same living room playing the game. So you can't really, like, empirically compare separate experiences because you're all doing the same thing.
Right. True.
And what always really tore me up about it is it's never in the middle. It's never like, the first course of the special cup is the hard part, or taking off and flying through the rings is the tough part of pilot wings. It's always right at the end. Whenever I try to land the guy in the rocket belt mode, I can never get him to get right onto the platform. He always just drifts a little bit ways. And on the first one, it's not so bad because it's just this one big target. But on the second rocket belt level, it's three small targets floating on the water. And if you miss, he lands in the water and you get 0 points.
Oh, yeah. There's so much meticulous little refinement you got to do to... Like, oh, okay, okay, all right. Okay, he's landed. You're like, ah, son of a... You got to do the whole thing over again.
Yeah.
I think one time with the parachuting, I literally waited till the last second. And I opened up the parachute and I landed it and I just kind of flared up. And I got him. It was like it was the most perfect parachute landing you could have. But that'll never happen again. That's after playing it for several hours on end. So,
hey John, have you ever let your dad play that game before?
Oh, he loves that game. He loves that one, nice. And he loves the 64 one. He loves playing those two games. I'm actually really waiting for the 64 one to come out on Virtual Console. I'm not exactly sure how that's going to work with the company that programmed it. I believe it was called Paradigm. I don't know what the rights are for that or whatever, but I'm hoping the 64 one comes out, because if it does, I'm definitely going to be grabbing that one on Virtual Console.
Well, it only took them – they're up to, what, 500 games on Virtual Console now?
Yeah, that is what was the 500th one?
I think it was Smash Brothers, wasn't it?
Yeah, Super Smash Brothers was the 500th. So they're a little over 500 now, which is
so good. It'll only take them 500 more, and then they'll bring out Pilot Wings 64. So that should be out by, I don't know, 2011, 2012, do you think?
Actually, one thing I'm really curious about, it's going to take a while for them to get some of those other games, but if you look at all the other systems, they had the Super Nintendo, and they had the NES, Sega Genesis, all those other consoles. The N64 has the least. I'm kind of curious why developers haven't released a lot of games on the 64. Like, Mischief Makers was a great game I loved.
Fantastic game.
And that's not on any sort of virtual console. I don't know who owns the rights. Same thing. But there's a lot of that era of video games that were on 64 that were not released. And I'm just kind of curious, if you look at the N64 roster for virtual console, it's all Nintendo-owned games. And I'm just curious why.
Part of it, I would expect, is that the N64 games are also the most expensive, aren't they? They start base price 1,000 points.
Yeah, they're currently 1,000. And another thing I might be thinking here is some of those didn't have the prettiest graphics. And since that was a 3D realm, that since games in the 3D realm have gotten better and look better and all that kind of stuff, people don't look at that as a luring. Because of that realm, because of where we are currently in the current generation. So that might be the biggest setback to games being released in that during that era on a virtual console, Xbox Live. I know the PSN, they release Liz, you have a PS3, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
And you were saying they have the Metal Gear Solid, I know, is for the PSN. And they have a lot of other PlayStation 1 games, aka PlayStation Classics.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, they have that like on there, and I don't understand why Nintendo hasn't done the same thing for their system for the virtual console for that era.
Because they're stupid. I don't know. I don't understand why they, like, it's such an easy thing. I was shocked when I got the PlayStation Go when I started scrolling through all the games. I was looking at it and I was like, I like all of these games. They're all good. They're all priced reasonably. And there's no downside to it.
That's actually it's got to be a licensing thing, don't you think? Like,
I think it is for a lot of those games.
Yeah, unfortunately so. But that's actually another big point is with the virtual console games, with the PlayStation Network games, I think they're priced at like $5.99 for some of the older games. People are starting to get to the point, because it's kind of towards the latter end of this generation of the console, that we look back and look at some of those virtual console games as slightly overpriced because it's another generation older. So, I don't know. But speaking of crappy Nintendo moves, did you hear about the fan film? That Zelda fan film?
No.
There was a Zelda fan film that called The Hero of Time that got
Hero
asked.
Of Time, that's the one, yeah.
Oh, no yeah. kidding. Why bother? Like, why cut off a fan film? What's the harm?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they... I don't know how they pitched it or how they proposed it or if it was an ongoing thing or if they say it's non-profit kind of thing. But since it's probably one of Nintendo's main franchises and the Zelda's coming up big this coming year or whenever they release the next one, it may be looked at as harming the franchise unintentionally or their vision of what the franchise should be. I mean, with Earthbound, they have no vision because they don't give a crap. So we kind of we kind of let us do our own, but... With Zelda, I can see why. And a lot of people are like, oh, that's – leave him alone. And some people are like, oh, good they stopped that bad thing.
Well,
but.
I'd be interested – I don't know the actual circumstances surrounding it, but it reminds me a lot of last – I think it was last summer that the big Squaresoft thing versus some people doing a hack of Chrono Trigger.
Yeah.
And apparently it was almost done. Like they'd been working on it for 4 years, and they were at 99%, and then out of the blue – comes this cease and desist letter, and they're just like, well, shut it down, boys.
You know what? The problem is they started telling people that they were almost close to finish. They should have kept their mouth shut, and they should have released it at 100%, and then if they get hit with a C&D, who cares? It's out. Like, everybody's got it, and then it becomes viral, and you can get it anywhere. Like, why they decided to go yakking about how it was almost finished? They got what was coming to them.
Well, but they also... There was a bit of a lay-down mentality. Like, if we'd gotten something like that where Nintendo was just, like, shut her down, but they gave them, I think it was 4 or 5 days to comply. And that's enough time to at least get a dialogue open and say to them, okay, well, what exactly are we hurting here? How are you viewing this? Because a hack isn't an actual distribution of the game itself. There's some wiggle room in there. And I just think they acquiesced too quickly for my liking.
It was barely a hack. I mean, they had a whole new script. They were calling it Chrono Trigger 2 or some such like that. I think to call it a hack is kind of misleading.
Yeah, it was more than a patch. They literally took the ROM. I'm just playing off of knowledge here. Please correct me, someone, if I'm wrong. But they actually took the ROM and kind of messed around with it, and based off the old CT-ROM, they made a new game. And like Liz said, they kind of suggested it and proposed it as a sequel to Chrono Trigger.
Yeah, but you can still do that. I mean, look at the tremendous stuff. You can take Earthbound and turn it into a completely different game. I mean, Radiation's Halloween Hack last year, more like 2 years ago now, actually. He altered the music entirely. He made enemies that actually broke the screen because they were so big. He had different – you can alter how much energy you get out of attacks and how powerful your psychic moves are. You know, he had it so that Life Up Alpha only gave you 30 hit points. You know, you can absolutely turn games on their head at this point. And it's still a hack in name. And you're right, it's just you're taking so much stuff and moving it so much around that you get a whole new game out of it.
I guess the point was is that it's the way they presented it as something so large and something so epic where they were taking on they were trying to take the stance of what Square usually is. I guess it's the way they presented it, the way they positioned themselves.
You think it was more a PR thing than a legitimate actual issue?
I think it got to such a big – it's like if something gets so big, it starts to step on certain toes. So, I mean, you can look at it in that perspective, or be Square is just extremely possessive. Because
They
shut down Chrono Resurrection, which was a 3D remake of Chrono Trigger back a while ago, even before it was to a significant level.
That's something I can understand, though, because that is actually taking the intellectual property and working it into a whole new program. That I can agree with.
But how is hacking a ROM not? You're still taking the same property. You're still taking, like, the written design of the game. I mean, that's not open source stuff. That's all stuff they created and paid people to do for them.
do certain things become open source after a while? I'm curious, because I know the SimCity went open source. I don't know how long ago, but I know it's an open source now. The old one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Presumably, if the company doesn't actually release the source as a official thing, then copyright law comes into effect, I guess, so 50 years past the death of the creator, which will never, ever happen, because in 20 years' time, we're going to have frozen cryogenic labs to keep Miyamoto's head alive.
Yeah.
So no, unless they release the open source, it's not open source. Yeah.
Gotcha. Okay.
Still kind of a jerk move, though. Regardless.
to keep your frozen head alive so that you can maintain copyright? I don't see anything.
No, I mean, the whole putting a damper on all these fan creations, going to take it in places where they weren't expecting it, I mean, I'd say let them go free and have their fun and do that. Everybody knows where the official things lie.
Exactly.
So regardless, you can just say, you know, hey, that's nice, but that's not canon, so then this is the real stuff.
Yeah, to me, it's like with the Legend of Zelda movie especially, the Legend of Zelda IP is so incredibly strong. Like, it's known worldwide. If you're afraid of some little, like, movie that a couple of fans are doing, what confidence does that display that you have in your IP? It's kind of pathetic to me. I think they should stand by the strength of their creation and say, this is such a good product and such a good franchise that it's not going to be injured by some fans doing a movie. It's good that they're doing it, and they're just spreading the word more. I mean, there's no bad press.
Well, on the other hand, what if it is really crappy?
So the CDI games sucked, and they stood behind those.
Really. When's the last time they actually talked about them in an official capacity?
They've done stupid stuff with the Zelda franchise, though. I mean, look at you got the CDI games. The cartoon from the 90s was goofy as all hell. I mean, they're not blameless here either. I think they should. I don't know. It's their call because it's their franchise. They own it, but it just seems silly to me.
But another way to look at it is what if it is very good? Couldn't they take that news at their advantage? I mean, look at Mrs. Pac-Man. It was just some people who hacked into the program and made a different game out of it, and they just kind of and the original people just took it and ran with it and hired those people on.
Is that really what happened?
Yeah, that's the story of Mrs. Pac-Man.
That's really cool.
For our audience that's under the age of 15, the same thing happened with Counter-Strike.
Oh, there you go.
Two guys hacked into Half-Life, turned it into a terrorist simulation, and the Valve guys, and same with Portal. Portal was a student creation that was originally Princess No Knees or something like that.
Oh, Microsoft, I think, did that with some guys who were working on what later became Halo Wars or Bungie.
I thought Microsoft just sort of bought Bungie with their millions and millions of dollars and turned them into the world-class producers that they are today.
Well, it wasn't Bungie, the company. It was actually some other programmers. This is after Halo had came out, but Halo Wars RTS game that came out, the version of Halo.
That's right. The one that everybody bought, and then they said, wait a second, this isn't Halo.
Right.
I think that was literally the review on one of the big sites like IGN or something was, this is not Halo. Don't buy this game if you're expecting Halo. It's not the same.
Valve definitely has a history of just taking in people that that make interesting things with their original creations. And I'd like to see the same thing happen to the Black Mesa project that's been going on for, I guess, a couple years now, which is basically recreating the original Half-Life using Half-Life 2 physics.
I thought they already did that.
They made Half-Life Source, but it's still not quite the same. And I think this Black Mesa project is like pretty much completely recreating it and actually bringing the characters who didn't really play any visible part that I saw in the original Half-Life. But they're actually going to have real roles instead of being generic scientists and all that. You'll actually see them.
Oh, like the guys who were in the expansions, like Blue Shift.
I don't remember seeing Dr. Kleiner or any of the others in the original. I might just not.
So like guys from Half-Life 2 as well.
Right.
Okay.
Because obviously they all knew Gordon Freeman. They just. I just don't remember actually seeing them in the original. Although there were a lot of people that looked very similar.
It's true. I thought it was kind of clever. Speaking of those expansions, like Blue Shift, you play the security guard who's locked out of the room that Gordon Freeman sees from the tram in the opening sequence. So it'd be kind of cool if you could tie all of those together.
Yeah.
Or like, I think his name was Adrian Shepard from the invasive, the team, the army guys. That was the very first expansion they did.
I've heard good things about it, but I never played it.
Well, my memory is fuzzy because this would have been like 10 years ago. Played a lot of Half-Life when I was in high school. Hey, speaking of jackets, hey, John.
No.
What do you mean, no? Come on, I promised people we would announce something.
Who gave you the off to make that promise?
Yeah.
Reed sort of obliquely did 2 weeks ago. Are we at least putting up the poll soon?
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to talk with him today, but he's been enjoying, or at least sometime this week, but, you know, vacation, holidays. I'm going to be talking with him hopefully tonight or tomorrow. So hopefully, actually, by the time this podcast goes live, maybe there should be something polling. So
a poll about our new Chrono Trigger jackets will be up by the time this podcast goes up, which means I can totally make reference to the Chrono Trigger jackets, which are going to be polling for colors that we're going to put on sale soon.
And you can totally, if they end up not
revealing
it. This is
our insurance policy right here, John. If you don't get in touch with and make that conversation happen and get that poll up, then I get the announcement on the Fan Gamer podcast. And then
it's up either way. Or you end up having to edit it out later.
Yeah, or you cut it in editing. I don't think you're beating the system here, dude.
All right, so did you want me to go ahead and tell you what it is?
Yeah, let's have a look. What is the new Chrono Trigger jacket, John?
So we're having a Lavos-themed biker jacket, or it's called a moto jacket, and it's called the Dark Omen, which is, I think a lot of people have already seen it. It's in one of our artist forums that we keep when we talk with the artists. And there's tentatively two colors. We've kind of deemed it one fire, one ice kind of themed. And so on the front, it says Dark Omen. There's going to be a side emblem on your sleeve. And on the back is Lavos, kind of above a fractured planet. It's going to look pretty cool. I think it's going to look really nice. We're going to be aiming towards a different demographic. Sorry, I'm burping up dinner here. So.
Nice.
So, oh, man.
Starman.net podcast coming in from the trenches, man.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what's going to be going on for that. And on top of that, as of right now, that's what we have. I believe Omnitarian is working on a shirt. I'm not going to go into that any further. So that's another hint for future, but for the future. But yeah, the Dark Omen jacket is what we have coming out.
It's going to be like the focal point of 2010's first wave of merchandise.
Yeah, we're going apocalyptic. Our set. So that's kind of what's coming out shortly.
I've seen the design. It really is. It's absolutely 1999 all over again. And really, it's vivid. It pops off the back of the jacket.
Is that the best way to phrase it? I don't know that people want a jacket that's like a style from 10 years ago, which it isn't, but you're making it sound like it is.
Oh, no, excuse me. I mean very specifically that the image itself is reminiscent. I don't even know how to pronounce that word. Why would I bother trying to say it?
Reminiscent.
Yeah, see?
Reminiscent.
It's nostalgic.
His Canadian tongue prevents him from saying that word.
But there you go. Mark hit the nail on the head. It's nostalgic. It'll take you back to that moment. Not in terms of the style, but in terms of the emotion. All I'm saying is it's a really nice jacket design, and you should all buy it.
I'm buying it.
The first commercial obviously needs to have Prince in the background, just while you're showing it off.
Absolutely. Yep.
We need to have some sort of apocalyptic background, like maybe where you can go blow up a building, and like, hey, look at me. I got a jacket on. Look at me. But yeah, it's going to be good. We have a other set of stuff to go along with it. But the biggest hurdle is we to make the jacket what we want to make it, we just are trying to figure out the production times for it. And that is our, by the time you hear this podcast, we will be tackling that and figuring out what to do.
You darn well better.
Can already smell the fires burning from the apocalypse.
Smells like bacon. Wait, no.
It's just another couple hundred years until we're all living in domes and not eating food because we have Energons, so.
I thought they were already doing that in 1999.
That's true, actually. They were, weren't they?
I think all the technology... Was that?
Domes or Energons?
Probably both of them. I don't think they created any new technology in that 300-year period between 1999 and 2300.
Oh, I see. I thought you were talking about in real life.
Oh.
I was going to say, when did we get domes and Energons? Like, I read SkyMall pretty frequently, and I didn't see either of those in there.
Sounds like we should get on that, then.
I think they've got one in the White House.
A dome?
Yes. They have a dome in the White House, Charlie. Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, it might be a very small dome.
They should call it the Dome House.
We have a pretty big dome here in New Orleans, I hear.
A super
dome? That's about all you have.
Yeah, we have a lot of things, including a dome.
I have an Inertron. It's called a shower.
I was going to say you're in Japan, so it makes sense. I wouldn't put that past them.
They're built into our cell phones now. No, but my Inertron, that's my shower.
There you go. In Star Wars, they call it a refresher.
It just energizes you right up.
It's like a Mentos.
The Fresh Maker.
But you're still
Mentos driven technology. Let me ask you this, a parting thought. How come if Luca invents a teleportation device in the year 1000, why do you still see roads in 1999 and 2300?
She probably destroys it. End of question.
Hey, don't you remember what happened the first time they used it? It was pretty traumatic. I'm sure after that they were like, no, let's not do that anymore.
The Who first time it works just fine. Reaction. Chrono goes from pod to pod, no problem. It's the second time they use it that it breaks down, but the first time it's fine.
Right, but who knows what other things are going to have that weird reaction.
She's right. It's a liability.
End up with half a person coming out on the other end. You don't want to be liable for that.
Although
it does remind me of this Canadian cartoon I saw one time about this teleportation machine that actually just copies the person to and brings them and makes a copy in this other refrigerator because they used refrigerators, and then the other refrigerator kills the original person. They don't just get transferred; they make a whole new person. It's kind of weird.
Actually, I think that's how the teleporter works in Star Trek, where they technically take a copy of the human and they make another copy of it, and then they disintegrate the existing one. That's why there's two.
Yeah, but see, in Star Trek, you have to disintegrate the old copy. In the Canadian cartoon Charlie's just described for us, all you have to do is keep the refrigerator door closed, and they just suffocate in there.
Actually, it's I think they were squished. But
ew.
Yeah, you actually watch them die. It's kind of dramatic.
So it's like The Prestige.
I'm not certain. I haven't seen The Prestige.
That's what I was thinking.
Was David Bowie in that?
He sure was.
That's cool. I really like David Bowie. I think that's where we're going to have to leave it off this week.
We can leave it off there.
We're going to leave it off with David Bowie. Would that we could do this every week. Just be like, hey, you know what? David Bowie. And that's the Fan Gamer Podcast.
We could start off next week with David Bowie just to get in the flow.
Maybe.
Just to dance. Maybe we'll just
hang out and do a little fashion. Everybody turn to the left, turn to the right. Yeah.
I turned the wrong direction. The other way.
Ah. Don't you understand? It's a metaphor for fascism. And if you don't turn the correct way, then we don't have absolute control. Oh, dear. All right. That's the Fan Gamer Podcast for this week, everybody. We hope you'll join us next week. We hope you'll send us some questions in podcast@fangamer.com.
Yeah, get on that, people. For goodness sake. Look what happens whenever you don't send us stuff.
And we start going off.
We start talking about David Bowie.
Teleportation refrigerators squish you. Did they keep the juice afterwards? Like, could you go into the refrigerator and be like, tasty glass of teleporter juice?
Well, Well, he wasn't squished into a cup, now was he?
Well, the guy was trying to keep it a secret that the people died whenever they were teleported, so...
Well, how do you keep it a secret if you can see them getting squished?
Well, you see, they closed the door. When the cartoon gave you an x-ray to see what happened, but usually you didn't.
Oh, cartoon effect.
Yeah.
All right, well, that makes sense. But, like I said, David Bowie, end of podcast.
Right. We'll see you next week. This is supposed to be over.
Yeah, we're trying to end this thing. What are you doing? Shut up. For Charlie, Mark, John, Joe, and Liz, my name's Kevin, but you can call me Simon if you want. That's our Fan Gamer podcast for this week. We'll see you next week.